Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hello, welcome to the History of Football podcast. My name is Nick Hart. We're back after a bit of a break in proceedings. I'm going to try and get these shows going again, listeners. And what better guest to kick us off is actually a show regular. I lean on this man. He's my mainstay. It's Mr. Neil Andrews. How are you, Neil?
I'm good, thank you. I thought you leant on Neil Fizzler for these. Different Neil.
Different Neil.
Better looking Neil.
I'll edit that out. It's great to have you back, Neil. For a little while ago, you suggested to me, and I'm keen to do this, a show about a much loved part of our collective football lives. I think, from our era, I believe, and going backwards, the slightly lost world of football annuals, something that would appear each Christmas generally. Always look forward to getting an annual at Christmas, listeners. And I thought that we'd try and do a little homage, an homage to the world of the football annual. And Neil, you're a bit of a collector and lover of these wonderful products of bygone years, aren't you?
I am. As anyone that ever read the annual for I Left My Heart at Coldblow Lane knows.
We did, yeah.
It's a funny one. It's like the beauty of Scalectric's train sets. It's something you remember. You always got an annual from your aunt or your granny under the tree. and, you know, like you said, you know, I used to get five at a time. I kept most of them. Now whenever I go into a second-hand bookshop or whatever, you know, I always look out for the annuals because you can find some real hidden gems there. And I have done, you know, old sculptures from the 70s, you know, early shoot annuals, etc. And they're fascinating reads. They really do capture, you know, the age of the game, should we say. And it's quite funny that I do anyway. I watched a big match we visited Saturday mornings.
Yeah.
You see these players, and the thing that comes to my mind is, he was featured in the Topical Times football book in 1981. You know, that kind of thing. And you're familiar, you know, it kind of connects all the dots from your kind of youth. And you're, I remember him. I remember when he played for Bolton Wanderers that year, you know.
I think it's what I find interesting, certainly as I get older, listeners, is the way in which your own life becomes woven into history. And I think annuals are, and the big match and all the other nostalgia sites that seem to have found myself addicted to on social media, they both seem to be familiar and close and yet so remote from modern life. I mean, the impact of the internet, Neil, has dealt a body blow to, you know, you and me have had this conversation a few times about the printed word generally, but in football specifically, as that's the nature of our show here. There was something in enduring. I mean, you just mentioned going to secondhand bookstores to pick up, you know, this goes across many other subjects, but the memorabilia of the past, it endures in a way that I'm not sure the the modern internet presentations will in the same way. Would you agree?
I would. I mean, you still get annuals these days. I mean, Shoot's still going.
Yeah.
I think Match of the Day releases an annual. You get club annuals, obviously. But it's not like, you know, back in the day when being a cover star was something like Charlie Buchan's Football Monthly annual. You know, it's like being on the front of Vogue. You know, it was a big deal. You were the cover star, you know. Do you honestly think Chelsea or Arsenal players give a toss when their annual is being released? And that they may do, I don't know. But, you know, it's not the same, you know. And it was a variety of variety as well, because obviously, you know, you pick up a copy of Shoot these days and you'll be lucky to see anyone from the Championship, let alone, you know, League One or League Two. But, you know, football annuals years ago used to cover every single facet. You know, I remember reading about women's football. You know, I remember reading about, you know, Rochdale and Spotland, you know, things like that. These were features in annuals kind of thing. You don't get that these days, you know, obviously with Sky and, you know, the Premier League. And, you know, you saw that when Harry Kane was going to Munich, how he wouldn't beat Alan Shearer's all-time goal scoring record, even though Alan Shearer's fifth in the list of all-time goal scorers. You know, it's kind of, it's that kind of thinking, but it's a real, like I said, a snapshot of the past and how every single club was deemed important, not only, you know, in England and Scotland, but also, you know, in Ireland with, you know, teams like Glenarvan and Linfield, who were featured in, I think, the first Topical Times book because they won the Irish League and the Irish Cup, you know, and it's kind of, you don't get that kind of coverage. It covered the entire UK and it covered every club, which you've got to admire in some respects.
Absolutely. I mean, we're focusing listeners on football annuals. I personally feel they're interwoven with a lost era of football magazine writing in general. You've mentioned Shoot magazine. I remember Goal magazine from my 1970s childhood, and you know there were others too around at that time. But they were the big two names in the field, and obviously they would produce an annual. I think Shoot more than Goal. But I do remember, it sounds a strange way to put it, Neil, but there was an educational value to some of this stuff because you would learn about things and places that were far beyond my little Nottingham Council estate. You know, I remember well reading about Cagliari being relegated in Serie A at the time. This would be about 1970-ish, I think. They got relegated and there was a huge double-page feature on, as they put it, relegation Italian style, because it featured disturbances in and around the ground and, you know, the players being harangued as they tried to leave the stadium, so on and so forth. And it was, okay, it was written in the style of the time, but it certainly provided an insight into times and places and lands far away that I'd never been to, never had any thought I'd ever be going to Italy, let alone read about, you know, Sardinia and Cagliari, for example. So there was a value to them. I mean, the European coverage would put you in touch with places that were behind the Iron Curtain back then. So I remember teams from the various European competitions would get some kind of coverage often in these magazines. So they served an educational purpose as much as any sporting coverage that they could provide.
Well, they did, yeah. I mean, you know, you talk about Shoot. I think Shoot kind of took over from Charlie Buchan and the Topical Times because... Yeah. They made photography their mainstay of their kind of magazines. You know, why have a 1,000-word article on, say, Scotland's World Cup campaign in 1978 when you can have the pictures from it, you know, that kind of thing that tells, you know, the story. But, you know, they built on what Charlie Buchan and Topical Times used to do. So, you know, as well as having, you know, articles on clubs, etc., they used to have really off-the-wall stuff, you know, on what was in a kit man's bag, for example, or new stadiums being proposed. You know, while I was looking through books for this edition of your podcast kind of thing, you know, there was one about Wolves, you know, reinvented Molineux, for example. Looks nothing like Molineux today, that kind of thing. But, you know, there's things like, you know, the PA system's being introduced, and even articles on floodlights and would there be midweek matches. But, you know, you think about it, they used to do things like, you know, how Match of the Day was put together or how the, you know, the Pinkins, you know, the football press that came out at 5:30, how they do those and how, you know, they would get the photographs to the matches or, you know, how they, you know, cover games, etc. And, you know, so they really went into detail and you'd always get oddball, quirky features, usually involved fans of obscure clubs who did something or followed them everywhere kind of thing. there was no, should we say, pomposity or even, you know, they never looked down on people. You know, there was none of this, oh, you're not in the Premiership, therefore you're a lesser club. There was nothing like that. But, you know, you say that, but, you know, I think everyone growing up our age knows when Arbroath beat Bonacle 36-0 because there'd be regular articles on it. You know, all these quirks, you remember these facts because they used to cover it all the time in these kind of annuals. You sit there and read on Christmas Day and you just used to soak it all in, didn't you?
I was trying to think of the date. Now, you've bounced me because everyone knows this. And I'm trying to think, when was it? It was 1886, am I correct?
Oh, yeah, sound like that. Yeah, I do know that
Bonacle... You don't know either.
No, I do know that Bonacle were...
36-0 was a famous score, wasn't it?
They were a cricket club. Yeah, and the goalkeeper for... what's it called for Arbroath? Actually lit a pipe and smoked it during the game because he was doing nothing. So, yeah.
Wonderful.
But
wonderful.
Yeah, you kind of do kind of remember that. But yeah, it was just, it's interesting that these were a staple from the post-war years up until, you know, by the early 90s, they were dying a death, I think. But, you know, that's a good almost 40, 50 years.
You know, which almost really... formed the game, I'd say. I mean, you've mentioned one huge name in football annual history, if you can call it that, which is Charles Buchan. I'm just looking at a review, which I think is a book you said you've got already. No, it's called The Heyday of the Football Annual by Ian Priest and Doug Cheeseman. I take it that's still available. This is a Guardian review from 2015, so it's been knocking around a while, listeners. But the kind of main photo, there are two example shots of Charles Buchan's 1956-57 gift book. With looks like Wolves versus, I imagine that's Manchester City, and then there's another show which looks like Scotland playing Wales in 1957-58. I mean, Charles Buchan was probably the big name of that really began this. I mean, I did a little bit of research, listeners, just to reassure you, I do some homework when I rather than just blag these shows, but I found. The earliest example of the word annual, football annual, I found actually on the newspaper archive, which was the Athletic News, who did a football annual in 1899. There may have been others before that, but these were rather like the kind of Ruffman's football yearbooks that were following their wake. These were compendium of facts based, rather than picture and article based, which is the great divide, I think, in what you might call the annual world. You've got those two approaches, don't you, the stats or the articles, and Charles Buchan really was the mainstay of the article based approach.
It was, I think the magazine first came out about 1951, but the first annual came out in 53. But you also had annuals, you know, that had kind of like Billy Wright, Stanley Matthews, Bert Williams, Tommy Lawton. You know, I think it was the All-Star Football Book. You had a few knocking around in the 50s, but it was kind of like the Charles Buchan Soccer Gift Book, as it was called, came out in 53. But to give you an interesting like angle of the times, you know, the cover star was Gil Merrick of Birmingham City in England, the goalkeeper. You know, and it was last published in 1974, but it hardly changed. And I've actually got a relative gave it to me when I was growing up. I've got one of the books from, I think it was the 67-68 season. Right. And to my eternal shame, I vandalised it by cutting some of the photos out, but more importantly, you know, graffitiing everything inside. So, you know, all the pictures have got people with kind of made up sponsorship or moustaches or false teeth. But there's an interesting room where they run through the player profiles. And anyone that played for a club I didn't like West Ham, I really went to town. So Bobby Moore was done up like a modern day drag queen kind of thing. But you flick through it, you know, and some of the articles, you know, you've got colour photos of players from Kilmarnock, you know, you've got colour photos from players from Ireland, like I said, you know, you've got articles about the smallest non-league football team to ever reach the FA Vase, was it, the trophy kind of thing. So, you know, they've never left a stone unturned, and, you know, articles of people like Gordon Banks and stuff like that. But then obviously Topical Times from DC Thompson came along, and what they did differently was, you know, they used fancy fonts, you know, the superimposed over bold colors. You know, they released it for the Christmas market on purpose. I think the first one was 59. But again, Bobby Charlton was on the cover, but on the back was Kilmarnock's Jimmy Brown, another goalkeeper. And it was kind of like goalkeepers like second to centre forwards back then in terms of the stars of the team. So you don't get that anymore.
No, you don't.
I was surprised to learn that Tropical Times ran until 2000 and hardly changed, which is impressive. But, you know, you look back, I've got a compendium of the Charles Buchan ones, and I've got a few old Tropical Times, and, you know, they are quirky facts. They're football photos that you see regularly on, you know, Facebook, things like that. But then, you know, as the 60s went on, you know, you used to get, you know, like, I think it was the Sports View Book of Soccer, edited by Peter Dimmick from the, you know, the BBC Sports View show. You know, Kenneth Wilson, Sloane's Book of Soccer, David Coleman's World of Football, All-Star Football Book, etc. So there were kind of competition. There was competition there. And there was a publishing house called Pelham, who launched a range in 1968. You may remember these, which focused on players. So you had things like the Dennis Law annual, the George Best annual, the Derek Dugan annual, Alan Ball, etc. And they did regional ones as well. You know, Midlands, London, Northern Soccer annual, etc. Before shutting up shop in 72, which, you know, you did get a lot of those in these kind of secondhand bookshops. But unless you knew what it was, you wouldn't realise that these were quite popular back in their day as well. But they kind of got replaced by things like Roy the Rovers, Tiger, Scorcher that came along that mixed fiction with facts and gave the comic book annual a bit of a niche market at Christmas as well, you know, alongside the Beano and Warlord, etc. You had these football books, you know, which, again, are of their time. You know, you had stories like The Boy from Argentina from the 70s, obviously Diego Maradona. You know, you had, even then they did non-league football kind of thing, but again, you had photos of clubs, you know, you'd sign in and, you know, you'd get a team like Millwall or Plymouth or, you know, Aller Athletic, and they'll do a feature about them. You don't get that anymore, which is a shame.
No, we've both gained the world listeners and lost it in a strange way. But you mentioned Roy the Rovers. That's always an obvious name to drop in any conversation, I suppose, about football annuals. I read the Wikipedia article about Roy the Rovers, and sometimes you just forget the scale of it. I mean, you've mentioned how popular these books were. Roy at the Rovers, in their pomp, in their heyday, was selling 500,000 or 450,000 copies of this comic. So it gives you an idea of the demands. Obviously, it's all pre-internet, listeners. So, you know, for kids of that era, myself included, yourself, Neil, this was your only real connection, other than whatever TV coverage could be gleaned. There wasn't a huge amount of that. That this was your connection with the world of football, really, wasn't it? It kind of linked you in with the personalities of the players, you know, in a way that wasn't possible otherwise.
I mean, you knew if you got picked up a shoot, you know, you'd get in factual articles. But, you know, you'd get articles on the NASL, you know, North American Soccer League, you know, next to articles on how to be a linesman, next to articles on Greenock Morton kind of thing. It was really, you know, eclectic in terms of what you'd get. But if you look through Roy the Rovers, it's a real snapshot of what's going on in the world. You know, you had football hooliganism, you know, the famous Roy the Rovers tries to beat hooliganism, but he also went to America. Yeah. There was terrorism as well, you know.
Terrorism, I was reading, yes.
Yeah, after Melchester Rovers team was wiped out in the Middle East.
A regular part of his football career.
Yeah, lost half their players kind of thing. You know, he ended his career, you know, helicopter crash kind of thing. It really did capture what was going on in the world.
Quite dark, really.
Very, very dark. But you also learn, you know, one thing I learned, I got the Billy Boots compendium, because I do get these compendiums when they came out, was that Deadshot Keane wasn't dead. He was actually alive in the beginning. So the boots weren't haunted by the ghost of Deadshot Keane, which kind of destroyed my childhood.
Right, that's the premise of the whole strip and the whole story, wasn't it?
Not really, because he was never dead. So I don't know where this premise came from. But, you know, the heyday really was, you know, you're talking early 70s till about 1986. What I have noticed, like, I've got Scorcher from 1975, which I actually bought from eBay, because I used to have this book, which I got from a jumble sale, and I lost down the years. So I bought 10p and then I got it again. And this bloke sent me another Scorcher because he couldn't sell it. So I got it for free, and it was Scorcher from 1980. And 1975 is twice the size of 1980. Whether that's to do with the weight of the paper inside, I don't know. But I've also got Scorcher from 1983, and that's reduced again. It's kind of like the third of 1975. So, you know, they were getting thinner and thinner and thinner as the 80s went on. But, you know, that Scorcher 1975, there's an article in there about Vince Hill playing with the Coventry City players, you know, and it's got the, I think it's Stoke City, what the players do in training. And, you know, it's got a picture of Peter Shilton serving behind the bar after training kind of thing. It's like, you would never see that these days, you know. It's no, you all wouldn't. Carefully controlled and, you know, but it's, yeah. But things like Shoot, everyone remembers Focus On. Everyone remembers, you know, At Home with so-and-so. But can
this
you remember
the, I suppose I should explain who Vince Hill was for younger listeners.
This is like true, sorry, yeah.
I would just presumed a huge amount of cultural knowledge there for someone born after, you know, the 1980s. Vince Hill was for me, a poor singer. But anyway, he was always on television, wasn't he? He was like a variety.
Got to number two with Edelweiss.
Did he do comedy? I think he might, between numbers, he might have dabbled in a bit of witty kind of bands.
He died recently, funny enough.
Did he? I probably shouldn't slag him off then, but I don't have any Vince Hill albums. Do you have any Vince Hill albums, Neil? I bet you don't.
No, I don't. I just remember he sang Edelweiss. I don't know why I remember that. I think it was part of the article, but... But you know, you've got Shoot with Focus On and At Home, but does anyone remember anything else apart from the Lucky League ladders, as it were? But
I was reading my Wikipedia, like I wrote it, the Wikipedia article. I hadn't realised that Paul Trevelyan, who was a famous artist, and did the You Are the Ref series, which acquired its own legs in a sense. It became a book in its own right. It may have gone on to become an album, an annual in its own right. So
I did. I've got it.
I answers every question, listeners. And I used to love You Are the Ref, Neil. And I think that was the thing with the kind of heyday of the football annual. It would have these features that they were like choruses in favourite songs. You kind of went there for a degree of comfort in a strange way. You knew what was going to come. And these were the landmarks that, you know, in between, you didn't know what you might get, other articles, features, strips, whatever. But these were the... these were the points that you looked for, you know, the kind of landmark elements of the magazine or the annual then.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction and free shipping. And that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/ACAST and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/ACAST.
Wow!
Nice!
Yeah!
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST. Code ACAST.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win. And support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
I think, you know, by about 1974, they had a fixed template, didn't they? You knew what you were going to get when you opened them up. But I think what's weird with this heyday is obviously it's the period when England wasn't very successful internationally. Mm. And everything focused around kind of like Kevin Keegan, because there was no other really big stars in the England.
Had no stars, certainly none to match the, he wasn't English, but Jules Best and Dennis Law and Bobby Charlton.
Bobby Moore, you know, you had loads of pick.
But these were kind of gods of the game, and there was no one really, there was a lot of journeymen worthy players, but no one to really match that world-class level that those players could, you know, you put them in the same breath as the greats of the game. So that was, you know, one of the... Also, I think as England became less successful, football acquired a certain kind of... it became more and more broadcasted in a way. I mean, the rise of TV amplified how poor the English national team were on an international scale. Unfortunate, really.
Well, you had English clubs in Europe, obviously. You did very well.
Yeah, got that.
So you always had features on, you know, the European Cup winners in England, that kind of thing. But, it's kind of like it rose because people were looking for success or reasons. You know, there's a number of, you know, annuals I've got where they try to name who's going to be in the England squad. And I remember one, the Sun annual, funny enough, in 1981, they tried to name the 22 players that would go to Mexico in 1986. The 22 they listed, two went. One was Gary Bailey, who was injured, and the other one was Mark Hatley. You know, there's no mention there of Peter Beardsley. He was playing for Carlisle United at the time. So it's an interesting snapshot that even back then, you know, players who maybe hadn't come to the fore, you know, were not overlooked, but, you know, it was kind of like you had these youngsters who play for the big clubs who, you know, whose careers kind of petered out. You know, you had Tommy Caton, who died age 30, for example. He was like tipped for great big things. And, you know, you, these sort of people stick in your mind because of the way their kind of careers panned out, or, you know, didn't, you know, hit the heights you thought they would. So there's a lot of, like you say, in the big match, memories and nostalgia there of, you know, the supposed, not supposed, that's probably the wrong word, but, you know, tip for greatness who never quite made it. And it's interesting seeing them, you know, come alive again as well.
I think one of the things, I'm just reading the review of the heyday of football annuals by Priest and Cheeseman. They make a good point here, which we've touched on already. I mean, the annual was a mix of fun and it took the reader seriously enough. I mean, there's a mention here of an article about defensive style called Catenaccio, which is like a sweeper system of the time, and using various systems to try and, as the Italians were masters of, and some of the South American sides. So, you know, there was the fun side, but there was also, from a youngster's point of view, there was some element of reading the depth of the game as well, which is to the credit of the producers, really, because it would have been easy just to stick to the fun stuff. I'm not putting any of that kind of side of it, you know.
Yeah, they never talked down to anyone.
No.
You know, these days, I think kids prefer to look at photos, not read long articles. You know, it's social media, you know, nice, snappy, one-liners kind of thing. So, you know, you get that. But they dealt with their audience, and I think there was this thirst for knowledge. Now, you often saw, you know, the origins of clubs, or, you know, where people came from, or, you know, in the early 80s, you know, the generation of black players coming through. You know, people used to take this very, very seriously, you know, what's going to happen next in football, or, you know, why people play a certain way, what happened to Alf Ramsey, or what happened to, you know, Don Revy kind of thing. They would go into detail, and they wouldn't patronise their readership, for want of a better word. I mean, even, you know, Roy the Rovers, you look at, you know, some of the comic strips there. Yes, they're comic strips, but, you know, they're like the same comic strips you'd see in Battle and Warlords, you know.
Yeah.
You know, oh, you know, Tommy England, him, or, you know, got him, or, you know, Banzai kind of thing. You know, there were people getting stabbed. And, you know, if you remember Hookjaw, which was a great white shark with a hook for its mouth, you know, he used to eat 14-year-old kids every week. We were kind of, you know, there was no hiding us from the harsh reality.
The harsh reality of the world was there for all to see.
You had players that, you know, break their legs. You had players that, you know, would get transferred. You'd have clubs that went under, or, you know, couldn't afford to survive, like Darrell's Palace. I remember that one about non-league football. But then next to it, you'd have Hotshot Hamish, and, you know, kicking balls through a net with his pet goat kind of thing. So they mixed it up really well, you know, the entertainment and, you know, the seriousness. But the artist, you know, you mentioned Paul Trevelyan, but, you know, a lot of these artists were Argentinian and Italian kind of thing. And I do remember actually reading the article about how they did kind of Roy the Rovers, and, you know, what these people would do. They would have TVs with early videos, especially in those days, and they'd actually freeze frame real matches and paint it accordingly.
Right,
and do the characters. But that's how they got the action. Wow. They based it on real life action and real life events.
That's incredible. I didn't know that. That's amazing. I mean, the artwork in any of those comics of that era always, you know, it was. Is to be admired. I mean, it's interesting. I'm just looking at the piece on the book we've mentioned. Both of the Charles Buchan annuals here feature what you might call action photographs, coloured in, I think, probably retouched for the purpose of a front cover. But so the one to the left is a Wolves striker jumping for the ball, is a goalkeeper in green leaping with him, with players on the grass around them. So it's an action shot. Ball is in the air. when I was coming back from Wigan, which is towards the end of last season, listeners, I was speaking to a professional photographer who's covering the game for Millwall. And I said, well, you know, I like those kind of shots. The one, the Scotland and Wales is a three-person tussle for the ball here on the other annual. And he said, what you're finding now, which maybe illustrates a deeper truth about the whole collapse of the football annual industry, but players now want individual shots of them in full flow, no kind of tackling, no no fighting off a challenge, no 50-50 element, or, you know, 33-33 element, whatever you want to call it. They want kind of individualised shots of them that almost illustrate their skill in action. And I found that quite interesting because, in, you know, invariably the photography, all of these annuals and the magazines of our youth featured, yeah, individuals, but often beating a man, or, you know, they show the game as it is, not some kind of I don't know, some kind of artistic depiction of you in an ideal situation. I don't know if that makes sense, but I found that quite an interesting point.
I actually follow a guy called Barry Tomlinson on Twitter.
Yeah,
he used to edit Tiger, Roy the Rovers, etc. He's got a autobiography, comic book hero, fascinating bloke. You know, he even today gives insights behind it. You know, he posts a picture of Ernie Wise, who came along to do a presentation kind of thing, or Eric Morecambe, etc. Or, yeah, you know, Gordon Hill, you know, and what went on in that shoot and how they did it, and, you know, the issues behind, you know, publishing these every week kind of thing. Because I think IPC Fleetway actually got rid of their back catalogue, whereas DC Thompson kept theirs and kind of do these compendiums. Fleetway, kind of like the main rivals, got rid of most of their back catalogues. Apparently, when they closed down, people just burnt them, which is a crying shame, all this artwork. But he, you know, goes into a lot of detail. But one of the things interesting, if you look at these compendiums, you know, and you look at things, because I've got the surprise, surprise, I've got the shoot one.
You've got me.
I've got a few of the others. You know, there's a couple of shoot ones, actually. You'll see a trend. Mm. And the main trend is Phil Neal. And I think Phil Neal is the early days of players being paid to pose for photographs. You've got Phil Neal dressed as a monk, Phil Neal playing pool, Phil Neal pushing Phil Thompson in the swimming pool on holiday, Phil Neal with his medal. It's like Phil Neal must have had a deal somewhere along the line to feature so heavily with all these, but, you know, dressing up as Santa kind of thing. But, you know, you're right. You've got players covered in mud, you know. Players
don't get that so much, do you? No.
You know, players scoring own goals, or, you know, goalkeepers, you know, screwing up, you know, a save kind of thing. You wouldn't see that today. You know, they'd have whole things, you know, whole type picture kind of features around mistakes or howlers kind of thing. And, you know, see, funny enough, I remember one of Ray Clements, you know, they're doing goalkeepers' bigger howlers. He had his head in his hands, and I could never work out why the goalposts seemed to be the wrong way round. And then I saw the howler he made. It was against Chelsea in the Cup in 1977. I remember the game when Chelsea won 4-2, and Clive Walker had a stormer. But yeah, he misjudged Clive Walker's shot, thought it was going wide, and, you know, you could see, and it's like the photographer was there behind the goal, got that perfect snap straight away, and, you know, they would use these pictures really well. And it's like, it's funny what sticks in your mind. But, you know, it's a funny one where, you know, all these images, all these players slowly come back to you and you think, yeah, what happened to them? And it, you go down a rabbit hole. You know, you go off to Wikipedia to find they ended up playing in Malta or the North American Soccer League, and now they run a pub, or, you know, now they do this, that, or whatever. But, you know, these were household names, you know, at the time for a season or two, and then they would disappear.
A feature I always loved, which you don't really get at all now, or maybe you do in a different way, and maybe now footballers feature in the likes of Heat magazine or OK or something, I don't know. But what you certainly don't get is the footballer at home feature, where the player with wife and kids will get the best china out and have a picture taken in front of their fireplace or something of that kind. I loved all that. It was so humanising, you know?
There was a magazine that did that. I can't remember who it was. I think it was the reimagined goal. Yeah. So it was someone did that, and they had Michael Owen's house, and he had the worst taste I've ever seen. And this, I compare this to the 1970s as well. Him and his wife were sitting on these horrendous, I think they were pink, frilly sofas.
Maybe that's why they stopped doing it.
In the most poorly decorated house. And you could see he felt he was the bee's knees. But, you know, when they used to show them holding a record, you know, it's usually Olivia Newton-John next to the latest stereo system or with their little mower out front of their now council house kind of thing. I always remember Glenn Hoddle had a swimming pool that was full of leaves. It's like, why would you have a swimming pool in
his hadn't fished them out with his fish net.
Trevor Francis had a bridge in his garden kind of thing, you know, on the bridge. Paul Marino in his camouflage jacket sitting on a Porsche kind of thing. But, yeah. Kevin Keegan and his two big dogs, Laura and Harvey. Remember that, yeah.
There's a wonderful there's a few little anecdotes in the review for the Heyday book we've mentioned a few times. There's one leapt out because Barry Bridges is mentioned, who played for Millwall and actually scored the very first goal I ever saw at the Den in 1972. He's playing in the forward line of the near-miss promotion season. But anyway, he was a Chelsea centre-forward when a magazine featured him. I think this would be Shoot magazine, I think, as a Chelsea player. Posing for their photographer whilst changing the bedding and sweeping the steps of his Eastbourne hotel. He'd just taken it over in partnership with his father-in-law. Now, that's the kind of story you don't get enough of anymore, you know. Eastbourne hoteliers by day, by night, footballer by day.
It was funny when doing the research for this, it was like I came across two Scottish players. I can't remember the names. One played for Kilmarnock, one played for Hearts. They were helping out on their father's fruit and veg stall in Edinburgh. It's a bit like Gary Lineker, you know, years ago. But yeah, you don't get that. And the sponsored cars, players with their sponsored cars as well.
Wonderful era of lost football.
I remember Archie Gemmell standing in front of a Ford Escort. You know, Archie Gemmell drives a Ford Escort from Birmingham City Motors. And you think, well, that's great, but you've got to walk around with this bastard on the side of your car. And everyone knows Archie Gemmell's in the pub or he's gone to the cinema or because his car's parked there, you know.
Oh dear. Trevor Hockey, the player again was well known in the early 70s, late 60s, early 70s, but he was hirsute, I think is the word I'm searching for, Neil. A bit like yourself, actually, now, mate. And he was had a feature when he's playing for Birmingham, sitting at home playing folk songs on his guitar beneath posters for Julie Felix and Bert Jansch, big stalwarts of the 1960s folk scene. And I think somehow we've lost something from football when we don't have enough footballers singing folk. Hippie posters, you know.
No, and we don't have any footballers saying steak, Diana Ross.
Well, that was a mainstay of that's mentioned. I think one of the articles mentioned the most popular person to have met was Muhammad Ali. Well, everyone wanted to meet Muhammad Ali. I don't know how many people we had on his social list. And steak was the other choice. Derek Hales of Cheltenham had the most famous one because he got blank answers to every question. Don't know, none. Favourite other club, none. Football you most admire, none. it went on through the interview.
What car do you drive? Yeah, full Capri gear. Married, no. International level honours, no. Hope to be picked soon. Ambitions. To be successful, that kind of thing, isn't it?
Oh, dear.
Favourite actor, Clint Eastwood or Burt Reynolds?
Yeah, and Burt Reynolds. Diana Ross was a huge favourite amongst the football circle.
Footballers had no music taste back then.
There we are. The rise of the internet would surely do for the kind of printed word, as we've said. They do live on, as Neil has said already. I had a quick look on Waterstones just ahead of our conversation this afternoon, and there's still you can still get annuals, Neil. Chelsea, I notice, Heart of Midlothian, Hibernian, Liverpool.
Still
individual clubs, and there are similar features, but it's not anywhere near the same.
I would recommend the Charles Buchan Compendium. There's one, there's a Shoot, 50 Years of Shoot, that's quite good as well. That takes you through the entire decade, although funny enough, up until the 80s is interesting. The 90s, I think most people stop reading. It just becomes a bit pappy, tabloidy. Not quite tabloidy as such, but it's lost the charm. It's lost, you know, that kind of, not naivety, but that simplicity. But there's also another version called Studs, which I don't think is available anymore. You might be able to get it on eBay, which again is a Shoot one. So there's a lot of duplication. But yeah, they've got some great, you know, focus ons and things like that, and at homes with as well. And obviously you can get all the Roy the Rovers kind of compendiums. But yeah, if you go into the charity shop, you know, most I've ever paid for an annual £6, you know. The least is about 50p, so you know, it's hit and miss, but
it's an affordable hobby. I think that you mentioned the 90s, and I was reading kind of a sad article, I found it quite sad, about the demise of Shoot, which was the feature of my youth. I used to really look forward to the weekly edition of Shoot for the reasons we've touched on in this conversation. But an alternative was set up called Match, which...
Match Weekly. Yeah.
Match Weekly. And gradually what happened, it was almost like self-destruction, because it's predated the internet, listeners. I'm blaming the internet for the ills of modern society. I think that's probably a bit too glib, Neil, because Match went down an increasingly simplistic FHM, GQ type lad mag kind of it approach. And Shoot tried to follow suit, and it lost its fun stroke serious mix that was its selling point.
Yeah, things like 90 Minutes, they tried to that laddish approach. But the problem was you had fanzines, you had things like When Saturday Comes, you know, that if you wanted proper football articles, that's where you'd go, because you know, these magazines weren't doing it anymore. You know, you'd get a few snippets, you know, you'd still get I still remember the odd facts, like Blackpool had problems. Do you remember when players used to wear the cycling shorts under their shorts? Mm,
yeah.
Blackpool had a problem because they couldn't find any tangerine coloured ones. And apparently their physiotherapist walked into a shop once and saw a whole bucket load and bought the lot. You know, it's things that stick in your mind kind of thing. But, you know, I remember they had I can't remember whether it was Gillingham or Halifax Town. It was someone like that. I think it was Fred Barber in goal, but for some reason they covered a page three model in cream.
As one does.
In topless, you know, with cream on it. And, you know, some listeners may think that's not a problem, but, you know, and this goalkeeper, you know, was kind of mimicking, licking this cream off. And it's like, this is when you know this is not Charlie Duncan's Football Monthly or Soccer Gift Book. You know, times have changed and it's like,
no. Yeah, sad, the loss of innocence, the fall of man and all that kind of thing, isn't it? I mean, in a similar way, I was reading about the history of Roy of the Rovers, which we mentioned already, but the final days of Roy of the Rovers featured, I think he had a marriage or breakup and lost his foot in an accident. I thought you're going down. The Taliban featured in one edition, and, you know, Like your model with the cream, you know, you just think it's probably played out at this point. Sad, but you know, you reach that point, and Shoot, I think, died out in the mid-90s. I think they tried to restart it a couple of times, but never quite.
I still think they had the odd one, but you know, the odd thing about reading things, you see other things that you remember from your kids, like Gola football boots. Well, you can get Gola now, you know, the old school type of things, but. Yeah, I remember Gola football boots, you know, the weird goalkeeping gloves. That, what was it, snooker, where you could play football with the snooker table kind of thing.
Yeah.
All these old ads, they're all featured in the Charlie Buchan one as well. But, you know, there's like this, like I say, you can wallow in nostalgia, you know, you can look things back with rose-tinted spectacles. But, like you say, they're still interesting. You know, you can still read these articles and, you know, you can obviously read them slightly differently now because you know what happened to the players kind of thing. But, you know, even the comic strips you can always read. But it's just interesting reading these articles and, you know, the jobs footballers did when, you know, during the summer when they went back to football, wonderful. Like stacking deck chairs or, you know, doing mid-rounds and stuff like that. It's a world away from today. And, yes, obviously things have improved from the player perspective and the medical perspective, etc. But, you know, you've lost that kind of romance around it as well.
Yeah. I mean, I don't want to get too... I don't want to get too... I find there's a lot of nostalgia sites on online now. I'm a bit of a sucker for them, listeners. I will be honest, I'm a sucker for them. But when you stop and look at sometimes some of the motives of some of these sites, there's more going on than just... look at this milk bottle. I think, wasn't it great when we had Milkman? And, you know, there's more lying behind some of the agendas of some of these sites. So,
what, you mean the trains always ran on time?
Yeah. You know, there's one called A Better Britain. Well, I haven't lived through it. No, it wasn't better. It was just that an old man now, and you remember your youth more kindly. It wasn't better. Anyone that thinks that is trying to sell you London Bridge. But anyway, that's a different subject entirely. Just to leave it on a hopeful note, my nephew, who is aged 15, child of the screen generation. You know, I bought him Subutio a couple of years ago, which I hadn't seen him touch since. But we've just come back from a week's family holiday, and he brought the Subutio along, first time he'd played it. And for a kid of the FIFA generation, he loved it. And I think there's a nice... I mean, I hoped he would like it, because I used to love Subutio as a kid, like we love this subject of our conversation today, the football annuals. And I think there's something uplifting about the fact that you can play, you know, collect a family, could play two on one side, two on the other, and have a bit of fun with a Subutio game. It left a nice feeling, and I'm hoping that that's what the football annuals that knock around today, I hope they do the same, because that is really what football should be for, in my opinion.
There is a, you know, we could fall into jumpers for goalposts and things like that, but there is a kind of warm, fuzzy. I remember reading this by the fire with the Christmas tree when life was so simple and innocent, and all I had to worry about was school the following day kind of thing. But, you know, I keep trying to get my son to watch Big Match Revisited with me, and he's not interested. And it's like, but what's this goal? I remember this goal. This is a fantastic goal, fantastic game kind of thing. And, you know, sometimes you know, your memory hasn't deceived you. You know, sometimes the goals were as good, or the players were as good, or, you know, you remember certain items and certain things. But I do find your attitudes with certain players have changed over the years. You know, players you used to like, you now can't stand, or stuff like that, because of various reasons, or something happened against your team later on when you were growing up kind of thing. But
you mellow with age, Neil. That's the thing, mate.
Yeah, I'm still waiting for that. But yeah, I look forward to it when it arrives.
Interesting. I'm just to close the conversation. We've just been talking about this idea of your life being better. I think one of the interesting things, in many respects, and all of the articles that you've mentioned, and the features, and the seriousness with which annuals approach the game, it's interesting how we've come a long way, and it's very little changes. I'm just looking at a piece in the review of the Heyday Football Annuals book. Mentions a death threat being issued against Ray Wood, the Manchester United goalkeeper in the 1957 FA Cup final, who apparently shoulder charged an Aston Villa player, Peter McParland, causing him injury. And in the aftermath of that, he received death threats. So that was 1957. So actually, we haven't come so far at all, have we, in that? What's that? That's older than me. That's 65 years ago.
Still there. We're yet to see another hand grenade on the pitch, like Chick Brody got for Brentford against Mill.
And we've never seen a pitch invasion at Wembley since. So we do at least have some. We do have some edge.
Yeah.
Lovely stuff. Neil Andrews, Football Annuals. I've enjoyed that conversation, mate. Thank you for coming on the show. I appreciate it.
It's always a pleasure. I'm off to the local bookshop to try and find some more.
Nice one.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode, and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.